like this.
When'd you go to formal meals?
With Trader. Some of the time, not all of the time. When we had important meals with powerful barons. I never liked them. At least we don't have a death threat here, like we often did then. Look at all these forks, knives, and spoons. I never knew which are the proper ones to use.
Begin at the outside and work your way inward. And watch what other people are doing.
A tall, gloomy waiter appeared silently at Doc's elbow.
Would any of you care for a drink while waiting for your host to join you?
That would be most splendid, most awfully kind. What can you offer us, my good man?
Most guests will take a glass of French champagne.
That sounds admirable. 6 glasses of bubbly, yes? Champagne all round, if you please.
The other guests were arriving, filling the remaining seats. All of them showed every evidence of wealth, power, and position.
Good evening.
Yes, how do you do?
Good, thanks.
The seat at the bottom end of the table, opposite the empty captain's chair, was taken by a red-faced elderly man in a black evening suit and white bow tie. Pulled so tight, it seemed close to strangling him.
Evening, friends. Name's Colonel Willoughby DeVere. And these here are my daughters. Family doctor urged us to take a vacation to get some fresh air.
The pale-faced, pinched women sat silently, their gazes fixed to the table.
A waiter! Can I get a mix of brandy and champagne, please?
I'm Baron Edgar Horan, and this is my wife, Deborah.
They were in their late 50s and formally dressed, looking askance at the casual attire of Ryan and his party, though the Baron was intrigued by the esoteric mix of guns that they carried. Ryan glanced at his wrist chron, seeing that it was 7:10. The only vacant seats were now the captain's at the head of the table and the ones on either side.
Captain Houston sends his apologies for his late arrival. He's overseeing our mooring for the night.
Well, how about those two?
Mildred pointed at the empty pair of seats.
Book the top chambers and you get invited every night to eat with the captain. But 2 of our honored guests sent a message that they don't want any stinking invitations. Quite rude, if you ask me. 2 other guests are going to take the seats. It would be very rude to Captain Houston to have empty places for dinner on the first night out. Here they are now. Very good.
Hello, all. I'm Troy Mills.
Hi, I'm Randall Mills, eh?
What brings you folks upon the river?
Our main purpose is to investigate some of the mines that lie close to the Sippy, ones we understand that are worked largely by sticky slave labor. We're owners of a large copper mill over the border in Canada ourselves.
Captain Melville Houston himself finally appeared, bustling through the dining room, bobbing, weaving, and bowing to his passengers, arriving at the head of his table and looking at his guests. He stood there as though he were waiting for something. Doc reacted fastest. He pushed back his chair and made a small bow.
Honored, Captain.
Houston was short and stocky, in his 40s, around 5'6" and 160 pounds, with a weathered complexion. Ryan noticed that the man's eyes were a light blue, but the left one was clearly false, moving haltingly. He was dressed in a dark blue uniform, with layers of gold braid around collar and cuffs, and he smiled faintly as he returned Doc's bow.
Glad to have you aboard the Golden Eagle, Dr. Tanner.
The captain watched as the others around the long table also rose to their feet.
Good to meet you all. Pray sit down, and we can begin to dine. I apologize for my tardiness. A problem with a shifting mud bank obstructed the mooring. Always a difficulty on the river, but we shall be stopping quite soon.
He sat and tucked a long linen napkin into his collar, beckoning to one of the team of hovering waiters.
Let's get started.
After dessert, the DeVere ladies withdrew, followed by the taciturn Baron Horan and his wife, leaving 9 guests in all to relish the decanters of fine port and brandy and tiny porcelain cups of real coffee. But the captain seemed preoccupied. Ryan felt a change of movement, and Captain Houston half rose. The momentum of the huge vessel gradually came to a gentle halt.
A night mooring, Captain?
Indeed, yes, Mr. Carter. Once across the sandbar, I was happy to entrust her to my trained officers.
Captain, as you know, my brother Randall and I plan to visit the mines up north. It's our understanding that you've 2 important guests who are deeply involved in the business.
So we heard.
Mm-hmm. Is it true?
The captain didn't answer for several seconds. His gaze flickered to Ryan, then away again.
I fear that the personal details of my passengers must remain private and confidential, if that is what they've chosen.
Oh, so we cannot meet with them, eh? Well, that's a shame.
You may approach them yourself, though I think it will prove a waste of time. They've made their wishes very clear in this matter.
Can't we even know their names?
Set aside idle curiosity, Mr. Dex. Speculation can only be harmful, perhaps even dangerous to those who attempt to pry where they are not wanted. Now, if you'll forgive me, I have essential business connected with the mooring. Please stay and drink at my table as long as you like. There's a good cheese board on offer and some fresh baked biscuits.
The captain rose quickly, bowed, and walked away through the mostly empty dining room. Colonel DeVere put his hand over his mouth and flushed an even deeper shade of crimson.
Oh, Lord. My apologies. I dined well, but not too wisely. Y'all will excuse me, won't ya? I must join my gals.
Making a staggering exit, the colonel walked with the exaggerated delicacy of the very drunk. Brian watched him go, aware that he himself was well stuffed with food, and that another glass of port or brandy would be one glass too many. The trader used to say that a man who remained too long at the saloon would likely be staying the night in the graveyard.
Time to take a turn around the deck, and then back to the cabin. It's 10 o'clock already.
Yeah, I had no idea that so much time had gone, lover. That was a great meal.
Yeah. I think Mildred and I'll head back to our cabin as well.
One by one, the friends rose to their feet, except for Jack, who stayed in his place. The Mills brothers also stayed where they were.
Said something about cheese?
And some more coffee. Help me come jober as a surge, eh?
All right, you take care, Jack. Night wears on, there's likely to be some cold hearts getting busy around the decks, looking for easy Jack.
Sure thing. Be long soon.
I would be most obliged if you came in as quiet as a mouse fart and didn't disturb a slumbering old man. My pate is somewhat addled, my intestines full to overloaded. What I need most is a good night's rest, and I shall be a new man in the morning.
Hope the new man's an improvement on the old one, Doc. Or is that too much to hope for?
Doc stared at her, watery-eyed, his mouth opening and closing like a gaffed marlin.
I confess that I am a tad lost for words, madam.
Makes a real pleasant change, Doc. Care to promenade me around the deck? Ooh! Watch out for the skeeters.
The dining room was almost deserted as they left. Ryan glanced back, seeing Jack's white hair glowing like a magnesium beacon in the general darkness under the spilled pool of light from the crystal chandelier over the captain's table.
Oh, come on, brother. Let's go find some fun.
The twins became tired of Jack's stubborn silence and left the table, tottering off arm in arm, heading for the roulette tables.
Would you like another coffee, sir?
I had enough, thanks.
Very well. Have a pleasant night.
Jack walked through the gambling saloons on his way out, being careful to try to avoid being sucked into the action around the tables. As he was leaving the garish room, a fat, scented, overdressed 50-year-old man wearing florid clothes and a rakishly tilted wig approached him.
Care to keep me company, my pretty little boy?
One hand was on Jack's arm, the other groping toward his groin. Jack pushed him away.
Fuck no! Got a good cabin, laddie. You can do anything you want to me. Like leather, and I could lie on the floor and let you...
His pocked face pressed close to Jack's cheek, so that the young man could taste the rancid breath. Jack's hand went like a striking rattler to the concealed sheath at the small of his back. He slid the blade close to the man's body, so that none of the men and women around saw what was happening, touching the needle tip to the flabby wobbles of the lecher's throat.
Walk away quiet, or I'll slit you open.
Didn't mean... pay you well if you're nice. It can treat me mean.
The knife dipped in harder, drawing a stream of crimson.
Shut the fuck up, or I'll chew you.
All right.
The man backed off, reaching for a kerchief to dab at the bleeding gash in his throat. Jack went on deck, looking out at the tree-lined shore where they were moored for the night. It was near dark, with tendrils of mist hovering over the water.